Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one or maybe two stories coming up this hour I hope you'll enjoy. The first one is from True Confessions magazine. It's called Family Ties. Here's the story. The very thing that first attracted me to Brody was the very thing that broke us up in the end, family. Brody was 100% devoted to his family. He had an ailing mom who always seemed to be going into the hospital for a surgery. He had two sisters who had four kids between them, and Brody was the doting uncle. In fact, that was how I met him. I was supposed to go to an amusement park with a friend when she had to cancel at the last minute. I showed up on her doorstep that day, fully prepared for the roller coaster rides in my jeans, t-shirt, and sneakers. "I'm so sorry, Lori," she said, answering the door in her bathrobe. "I should have called you last night, but after I took that cough medicine, it just knocked me out cold. Here, take the tickets. Have a good time." I stared down at the tickets she held in her hand. "I don't know, Grace," I said doubtfully. "I loved the rides, the fun, and even the pink cotton candy, but going to the park by myself, I didn't think so." "You can do it," she said, sneezing and reminding me just how sick she was. "You might even meet Mr. Wright there." "Yeah, right," I said cynically. "About all I'll meet is a bunch of moms with little kids. Who else would be going to an amusement park on a weekday?" Grace gave me a push towards my car. I went reluctantly. It's not that I couldn't go to places by myself, but it was so much better to have a friend along to share the fun. Still, what else could I do? If I didn't go, Grace would feel bad about ruining our day, and I couldn't lie to her and say I went if I didn't. Grace could see through any lie. All right, so I would go. Spend maybe an hour, go on a couple of rides, and eat a corn dog. Enough to tell her that, of course, I went and had a great time. There wasn't a big crowd at the entrance of the park, just as I'd thought, a number of moms out with their kids. It seemed to be taking quite a while to get through the gates, though. Suddenly, behind me, a group of kids all about the same age came running up. One couldn't stop in time and bumped into me. "Ethan, you apologize to the lady right now," I heard a firm male voice say. "I'm sorry, ma'am," the blonde boy who'd just run into me said. "That's better. Now line up, all of you, and wait your turn." I looked over my shoulder to see a tall man with dark hair herd the kids into a line. He sent me an apologetic smile. "Kids, what can I say?" he asked, with the most charming smile I'd ever seen on a man. There was something so sweet about him. These kids loved him. That much was clear. "What's taking so long?" one of the kids whined. "I don't know, Colin," the man said. "Miss, do you know what the holdup is about?" he asked me. "I'm not sure. There were two women in the booth. The first one left, and now it looks like the other one did, too," I explained. "Uncle Brody, I have to go to the bathroom," the young girl of the group told the man in a loud whisper. I could see the look on his face as he looked around for the public washroom. "If you'll hold my place in line, I'll take her," I said. "Would you?" he asked, his gratitude plain on his face. "I'm Lori, by the way," I told him. "Brody, and thanks for taking my niece," he said. Brody's niece, Gillian, took my hand as we looked around for a washroom. "That's my Uncle Brody," she said proudly. "His sister is my mother, which makes him my uncle. He's not married." I looked down at her and smiled. Kids, they were the world's most persistent matchmakers. I could imagine poor Brody was used to this. "Oh, then all of you are..." "I'm his niece and the boys are his nephews. Their mother is also Uncle Brody's sister. They are my cousins," she said carefully, as though just learning the intricacies of family relations. "Well, you look like a lovely family," I told her. What a sweet guy, I thought, babysitting his niece and nephews, and probably giving his sisters a nice break. We found the public washroom, and I waited for Gillian, all the while I was thinking that I didn't find too many single men who were so dedicated to family. It was nice. On our way back, Gillian gave me a complete rundown on Brody's life. "He's real smart. He works in a big office. He lives alone in a bare apartment." "Bare?" I asked. "You know, no toys. No nice things like a cat or a dog, because the landlord wouldn't let him. I think he's very lonely there all by himself." I diplomatically chose to ignore that last statement, but I had to smile. If Brody knew how hard his niece was matchmaking for him, he'd probably be embarrassed. When we returned, we found that Brody and the boys got through the admission gate and were waving us in. When they found out that I'd come to the park alone, it was a unanimous decision to have me join the clan for the day. I was a little reluctant to impose until Brody whispered in my ear, "I could really use your help with Gillian and the ladies' washroom thing. She has a medical condition and has to go quite often." I, of course, agreed to stay with them. I had the time of my life. It would have been lonely for me to go to the park on my own, watching the other people had fun with their kids. But with Brody and his crew, I felt like I'd been part of the family for years. "Who wants cotton candy?" he asked, which was followed by a chorus of "me." "What about you, Lori?" Brody asked, as the kids ran to the vendor. "Sure, what's a day at the amusement park without the pink stuff?" I asked. "That's my girl." It turned out to be pink, green, and blue stuff, too. The kids got it in their hair, on their faces, and on anyone they came in contact with, including Brody and me. If he looked as messy as I did, then I must have looked a fright. "Auntie Lori, I have to go to the bathroom again," Gillian said. "We'll meet you at the Tilt-A-Whirl," Brody said, taking the boys in the direction of the big red ride. "He likes you, I can tell," Gillian told me when we were alone. "He likes you a lot." It was probably just the reflection of a hopeful kid waiting to match her uncle up with any single woman, but I felt flattered anyway. Brody was a handsome man, but more than that, I could tell he was a caring man. He looked after his niece and nephews like they were his own children. For the first time, I wondered if he had any children of his own. I could have asked Gillian that, but I had a feeling that that information would be sent back to her Uncle Brody as soon as I left. As the afternoon wore on, I was beginning to feel sad over saying goodbye to this family. I really did have a good time. I wouldn't have to lie to Grace at all. Well, my car's over there, I said as we all walked back to the parking lot. You four go ahead and get in the van, Brody said. I'll be right there. Goodbye, Lori, the kids called out, waving and then racing each other to the minivan. I had a good time today, Brody said, a little shyly. Me too. You have a nice family there. I know. Sometimes I wish they were all my kids, he said, and I could see a shadow in his eyes. Was it regret that he didn't have any of his own? Well, I guess I'd better be going, I told him, holding my keys, but not really wanting to leave. Lori, could we see each other again? He asked. I mean, without the whole crew next time? I think I'd like that, yes. Really? That's great. When and where? I suggested a little cafe that I loved on a busy downtown corner. Sounds like a date, he said, smiling. And Lori, thanks for your help today. The kids loved you. I didn't do anything, I said, but I was blushing a little from his praise. It was nice to see him as a family man. It would be even nicer to have his undivided attention on me. As I was driving home, I felt a warm glow. Brody was special. I hadn't met anyone like him in a long, long time. My last serious relationship was with a guy who was addicted to running in marathons. It didn't take me long to realize that my life would either be about cheering him on from the sidelines or waiting at home alone when he was on a trip to a marathon. We finally came to the decision that we weren't meant for each other. I heard that he got married recently to a woman who loved marathons about as much as he did. I hope they'd be very happy together. But that's not what I wanted for my life. Sure, it was great to share a passion together, but I believed that the real passion should be between a man and a woman who loved each other. At least that's the kind of love I longed for. It didn't take Grace long to find out that I met someone at the amusement park. I tried to hide it from her at first. So how did the roller coaster rides go? She called to ask. Oh, same as usual, I hedged. You met someone, she said bluntly, with that best friend antenna that never failed. Really, the CIA could learn something from Grace. Or I guess she called her Gracie. Cautiously, I described Brody. We just met, and yes, I did feel an attraction. And yes, we were planning to meet for coffee. My eardrum almost exploded when she squealed in delight. I knew it. I knew it. Me getting sick was the best thing that could have happened that day. But when I showed up at the cafe for our date, Brody wasn't there. I waited almost 20 minutes, then got up to leave. I'd been stood up. Lori, wait, don't go, Brody said, rushing into the cafe as I was paying for my latte. I'm so sorry. There was a little emergency at home, he said, leading me to the nearest table. Nothing serious, I hope, I asked in concern. It's one of my sisters. She was supposed to come home in time to pick up the boys, but she didn't show. I'm really sorry about this. I told him not to worry about it. These things happen. What I didn't realize at the time was what they always happened to Brody. Maybe I'd known more about him, or if I'd known more about him then, I wouldn't have fallen so hard and so fast. But the truth was, it was very hard not to fall in love with Brody Keller. It was like he read my wish list for the perfect man. "Let me take you out on a real date," he said. "What about operas?" That was the best restaurant in town and one that I didn't get to very often because I just couldn't afford it. Brody ordered the lobster and steak and a really good wine for us. It had been so long since I'd been on a real date that I didn't know how to behave on one anymore. But he was absolutely charming, telling me funny stories about things he and his co-workers did. "Did I tell you how beautiful you look today?" he asked suddenly, then blushed as though these words had been on his mind, but he hadn't intended to say them out loud. "No, you haven't," I said, smiling in surprise. I put a self-conscious hand up to my wispy hair that had gotten messed up in the breeze outside. I wasn't looking my best, and I knew it, but to Brody, I was beautiful. We had other dates. Some were as simple as a long walk by the river, followed by ice cream. Others were like that date at operas, but it didn't matter where we went. My day at work was more exciting just knowing that I'd be seeing Brody that night. We could talk for hours on almost any subject. I was falling for him. Grace knew the signs. "I'm all for you finding someone new," she told me one day. "But do you think that he could be a keeper?" "Oh, I'm not sure. But this weekend I might find out." "Oh, what's so special about this weekend?" "He's taking me to the mountains," I said. "Tamarack Resort." "The Tamarack?" she asked and then whistled. "That's the honeymoon resort, isn't it?" "Yes," I told her, looking for her square in the eyes. "It is." Her blue eyes widened in shock. She knew that it had taken me a whole year to move in with the marathon guy. It just wasn't like me to make any hasty moves where men were concerned. "Lori, are you sure about this? I mean, you've only known him, what, a few weeks?" "It's been 2 months, thank you very much," I said defensively. "And if you recall, it was your fault that we met in the first place. If we'd gone to the park together that day, Brody and I probably wouldn't have gotten to know each other at all." From the look she was giving me, I'd be doing some explaining later on. Grace was a romantic, but she had good common sense too. She was telling me in her own blunt way that this romance was going too fast, and I didn't want to hear a word of it. It was just such fun to be with Brody. It was fun to be a couple again, to enjoy things together so much that the things I did without him somehow seemed dull. I was hoping that we'd take our relationship to the next level in the mountains, and I wasn't disappointed. After dinner that first night, I invited him back to my room. "Are you sure about this, Lori?" he whispered at my door. "Never been more sure," I said, and then grabbed his collar to draw him down to my level for a long, hot kiss. It had been a very long time since I didn't sleep the whole night. I mean, not one wink. We were like two young teenagers alone for the first time. Finally, when the first light of dawn seeped into the room and I watched Brody's chest rise and fall peacefully in sleep. I felt such contentment that I couldn't sleep myself. Suddenly, in the middle of that thought, came another one. It's too good to be true. I tried to push the negative vibes from my mind, but they just wouldn't go away. Even when Brody woke up and slid a lazy hand down my waist and hip, teasing me into more lovemaking, a little part of me held back. I hated myself for it, but I couldn't shake it. I managed to hide my feelings from Brody. I'm sure he didn't suspect a thing, because that night he proposed. At least he started to. I know we haven't known each other long, Lori, but I find that now that I've met you, I just don't want to be without you. And suddenly his call or his cell phone rang. He looked at me with an apology in his eyes. Sorry, I have it on in case anything happens to Mom, he said, and left me right in the middle of his marriage proposal so he could go into the other room to talk to his mother. I knew she was sick, and I knew she depended on her son, like everyone else in the family. But I was a woman in love, and I wanted my first real marriage proposal to be special, not cut off halfway through so the love of my life could talk to his mother. Was it selfish of me to want a few minutes of privacy with him? What made matters worse was that she was half deaf and the connection apparently was pretty bad. He had to yell and repeat himself several times to make her understand. Immediately, I felt shame for thinking that way. She couldn't help it if she had cancer. She'd never learned to drive, so she couldn't drive herself to the hospital or to her many doctor's appointments. But still, my feelings of resentment wouldn't go away. I'm so sorry, Lori. I'm going to have to go back to the city, Brody said, not surprising me in the least. Mom's not feeling well, and I think I have to take her into the hospital. Why don't you stay here and enjoy the rest of the trip? No thanks, I said. Staying alone in this honeymoon paradise? I didn't think so. For one brief moment, I wondered if our real honeymoon would be interrupted as well. Would Brody drop everything, including me, to run to his family when they called? We drove back, mostly in silence on my part. Mom can't wait to meet you when she's feeling a little better. I can't wait to tell her about... Suddenly he stopped, remembering something. Lori, I asked you to marry me, and I didn't even get your answer yet. When Mom called, I got distracted. Why don't we wait on this until your mom is feeling better? I hedged. Instead of trying to convince me to marry him, he looked relieved. Maybe he was even regretting asking me already. I was hoping you'd say that. I mean, when Mom is better, then we can all celebrate. I'm just thinking that it's not appropriate right now with her getting into the hospital again, or going into the hospital. I understand, I told him, reaching over and holding his hand. But a part of me didn't understand. I didn't understand at all. I wanted him to sweep me in his arms and say that he loved me, that we should get married right away, that I was the most important person in his life. His mom went into the hospital and they kept her there. She had to have another operation, a relatively minor one, but Brody took time off from work to be with her constantly. I was sent home to wait patiently until she got better. Eventually, I called Brody and invited him for dinner. It was the first time we'd been together in 4 weeks. I planned a romantic dinner, just the two of us at my place. It took all day to cook a special supper and make the preparations, including the trail of red rose petals from the front door to my bedroom. "You're late, sweetheart," I said, calling him on his cell phone. "I'm gonna be later still, Lori," he told me. From the sound of things, he was in the middle of traffic. "What's up?" "It's the boys, their mother. It would take too long to explain. I'll call you back." I waited until the candles of our romantic dinner had burned halfway down. Finally, I got up from the sofa and put them out. I wrapped our dinners in plastic wrap and put them in the fridge. I tried calling Brody again, but this time just his voicemail answered. I didn't leave a message. When we were first dating, I'd almost forgotten that Brody had a family. I would ask about Gillian and the boys, and he said they were doing fine, but I'd catch that faraway look in his eyes sometimes, and I knew that he was thinking about them. There was much more about his family than he was telling me. That wasn't a good basis for a lasting relationship. I wasn't so blindly in love that I didn't know that. Finally, after midnight, he appeared at my door, looking exhausted. "What a night," he began. "First, Mom had a bad reaction to one of her medications. Then I got a call from one sister saying the other hadn't shown up to pick up her boys. So I went there to take them to my place." He paused for a moment, reading the look on my face. "Oh, Lori, I'm sorry. I should have called you earlier." "Sorry, sorry, sorry," that's all he says to me. He looked over at the table with the now cold candles. "We can't do this now. Here, I'll light the candles for you. Have you eaten already?" Okay, so he says we can do this now. "Brody, I want you to tell me all about your family. You did ask me to marry you, after all. I think I have a right to know." He looked at me and then sat back down on the sofa. I could tell he didn't want to talk about them right now, but I held firm. I had to know about my future in-laws. Brody had two sisters, Suzanne and Melly. Suzanne was Gillian's mom and by far the more responsible of the two. Melly had the three boys. She was also an alcoholic. I'm not talking about closet alcoholic, like someone who drinks at home and managed to hide it. No, Melly likes to drink on the streets. She used to be a street person, and that's where she's headed again. "But what about the boys?" I asked. "What about the boys?" he answered tiredly, rubbing his face. "She doesn't care. She only cares about the next bottle. That's where I found her tonight after Suzanne and I got the boys in bed. Melly was out there on Skid Row with all of her old friends." There was such pain and bitterness in his voice that I jumped up and went to him, threading my arms around his neck in comfort. I had no idea that the man I loved was shouldering such a burden. "So there's no one to look after the boys?" I asked. "Only me and Suzanne. Mom never was in very good health. Suzanne tries, but she has her own problems. She's been on medication for depression for several years now." It finally began to sink home how much his family depended on him. Without Brody, those boys might be in foster care. He even took Gillian when Suzanne was unable to cope with her only child. And as for his mother, she'd had surgeries almost every year because her cancer kept returning. When she's not in the hospital for an operation, then she's in emergency with a bad reaction to a medication, or she needs another round of chemo. Some days she cries to me just to let her die. I held him and just let him cry himself out. I knew that he couldn't do this in front of his family. They depended on him. He couldn't let them see him cry. He especially couldn't let the kids see anything other than their strong, cheerful Uncle Brody. He was their rock. Brody was looking after 3 adults and 4 children in very trying circumstances. I'm sorry, Lori. I didn't want you to know. Didn't want me to know? Brody, when were you going to tell me? After the wedding or before? He looked ashamed at that, and I felt bad. But didn't I have the right to know the truth? I'd better go now, he said, tiredly. Suzanne is all alone with the kids. He paused at the door. Lori, I hope that all this won't change your mind about me. I love you. I closed the door quietly behind him. When I was sure he'd walked on down the hall, I leaned my head against the wood and cried. Even though I showed support with Brody in private, I was feeling very sorry for myself. He wasn't mine, not really. I had to stand in line behind his mother, his 2 sisters, and all their kids. What was I getting myself into? I broke it off with another man over his obsession with running. How on earth did I compete with a man's family? There seemed to be no solution. Too good to be true. Too good to be true. Those words beat inside my head like a powerful drum. It was only fair to tell him. The next time I saw him, I tried to break it to him as gently as I could. Brody, I started, taking his hands in mine, I don't think we should go through with getting married. He sat there on my sofa, stunned. I just think that you have too much in your life right now. You mean my family, he said, his lips twisting in bitterness. I just meant that maybe now's not the time to think about getting married and starting a family of your own. I took a deep breath. Although I was starting to care for him a great deal, I could see how my life with him would be. Our marriage would always come second, after his mom, his sisters, and his niece and nephews. I couldn't take back seat to them, not now, not ever. You're saying that you don't want to marry me? Yes, for now, I guess I am. He got up and began pacing the room. I can't believe that. You're turning me down because I love my family too much? Your trouble is, Brody, that you can't say no to anyone except me. That's not a good way to start a marriage. You love the fact that I'm caring and sensitive, Lori, as long as it's all about you. When I show that side of me towards my family, that's when you get upset. You're selfish, Lori. Has anyone ever told you that? Or were your past lovers too blinded by your looks? I slapped him. He was wrong about me, so wrong. Or was he? He stared at me. I could see the red imprint of my hand on his cheek. I've never hit another human being before. My mom is getting old. She has cancer. I don't know how much longer I'll have with her. When I marry, I hope I'll have many years with my wife. But for now, I guess I have to make a choice. I watched as he walked out of my door and out of my life. Sometimes in life, you get what you need. The next day at work, there was a major crisis. Our company was in the process of a major acquisition when one of the partners became very ill, close to death. I was asked to take over the Eastern Division office for a few months. I jumped at the opportunity. Only time would be able to heal my heart. I really had loved Brody. A few months later, Gracie flew out for a visit. We were sitting on the roof lounge of my apartment building when she cautiously broached the subject that was uppermost on her mind. "How are you doing, really?" she asked. "I'm doing fine, really," I answered. She looked at me in the eye. I knew what she was seeing there. It was the same thing I saw every morning when I looked in the mirror. Sadness, maybe regret, and then finally, a certain kind of calm. Not peace exactly, but I was ready to go on with my life. I now had two failed relationships under my belt, not something I was proud of, but it was only the last one that caused me to lose sleep at night. I still had the feeling that I'd lost something irreplaceable. I stayed awake at night thinking about how I would have handled it differently. "You just can't come between a man and his mom." What was I thinking? His sisters and niece and nephews were a different matter. He could and should have let his sisters raise their own children. But I'd made the mistake of lumping all of his family together. But a son owes so much more to his mom, who gave him life, than he did for his siblings. Maybe I was wrong, but that was how I felt. I should have seen the difference while we were still together. Being his fiance and a woman, I could have helped him with his mom. Instead, I chose to see her as the enemy. He was right. I had been selfish. I wanted to call him and tell him I was sorry. I wanted to make things right with him. I called and left messages on his voicemail. He didn't return my calls, and I couldn't blame him. Maybe it was time to give up. "Get on with your life, Lori. You lost a good man there," I would tell myself. "No sense moping about it. What's done is done." Still, as the months went by, I would think of Brody. Whenever I saw a group of kids laughing together, I'd think of him. One day I saw a man helping an old lady, probably his mother, at the grocery store. Again, I thought of Brody. Eventually, I moved back to the city. I'd long since let my old apartment go. There were too many memories there for me, anyhow. I was given a big promotion at work for helping my company out in its time of need. My career couldn't be doing better. My love life was in the ditch. "Enough is enough," Grace told me one day. "Tonight we're going out and meeting some men." It was hard to say no to Grace. It was easier to just go along with her. I went out with her to a club that had just opened. "This place is packed. If we wait to get served, we'll be old women," she said. "I'm going up to the bar. What would you like?" "Margarita," I said, and she nodded. "Hello, Lori," a voice came out of the crowd. "Brody." He looked thinner and sadder. I wondered, could it be because we broke up? How are you?" I asked. "I got your messages, Lori. I'm sorry I didn't call you back. I'm sure you were very angry with me. I want to talk to you about that. Can we step outside?" I asked. He nodded, but I couldn't read what was in his eyes. I went to tell Grace that I'd be gone for a little while. Once outside the noise and heat of the club, we walked slowly along the sidewalk. I wanted more than anything to reach down and take his hand in mine, but I didn't. "Mom passed away," he said. I drew in a quick breath. For some reason, I'd never suspected this. "Oh, my, I'm so sorry. That's why I didn't get back to you. And then a couple of months later, your phone had been disconnected. I had moved again," I told him. I could feel his sorrow at his mom's death like a cloud over him. "I'm sorry I wasn't there for you," I continued. "I called to say I was sorry about our fight, too. I was wrong, Brody. You were right. I was being selfish. I could have handled it better. It wasn't fair for you to take on a husband and a new family with all of their problems. How are your sisters doing?" I threatened Melly, the mother of the boys, if she didn't get herself into rehab. I was going to report her to child services and they'd take her kids away. I stared at him, shocked. "After you left, I realized just how much I was giving up for my sisters. My mom, that was different. I'd do anything for her. But a sister who refused to help herself, let alone her three kids, it was crazy to keep trying to hold things together. The kids were miserable, and I lost you over it." "So where are the kids now?" I asked. "They spent time in different foster homes to start. It tore me up inside, but it was the best thing that could have happened to my sister. It was only then that she could see the consequences of her addiction. She just got out of a long rehab, and so far, she's been doing well. I visit the boys often. They are together again with new foster parents. They're really good to the boys. It's the first real mom and dad that they've ever known." He told me his other sister, Suzanne, Gillian's mom, had moved away for better job opportunities. Suddenly, the man who had too much family had no one at all. "Mom told me just before she died, stop all my mothering. She told me to let my sisters live their own lives, no matter how imperfect those lives were. I thought she was wrong, that to have the boys put in foster care was the worst possible thing that could happen to them. Turns out that in their situation, it was the best." I reached for his hand then. I knew how much he loved those kids. "So where do you go from here?" I asked. I couldn't stop my heart from pounding. I hoped he couldn't hear it. "Oh, I don't know, Lori. That all depends on you if you'll have a coffee with me. You aren't seeing or you aren't leaving behind a hot date at this club?" I teased gently. "No, my work pals dragged me out tonight. They were tired of me moping around the office all day and into the evening just to avoid going home to an empty apartment. What about your date?" "Grace," I said, laughing. "By now she'll have a man on each arm, half her age. She won't even notice that I'm gone." "In that case," he said, holding out his arm for me to take, "we've got some catching up to do. And another thing." "Yes?" "Mom told me something else before she died." "Don't let Lori go," she said. "She sounds like the one." "She did?" I asked, deeply regretting never meeting his mom. "She also said that she'd come back to haunt me if I did," he finished, drawing me into his arms. Okay, that's the end of that story. If you tuned in late, this is the Romance Program with Volunteer Jeannie Ost for Sun Sounds. I have some time left, so I'm going to read the feature from True Confessions magazine called My Man. This one was written by Cynthia Doral from Virginia, and it's called Heart of Gold. Here's the story. My husband, Jerry, is the most special man in the world. For 14 years, I have been blessed to have him to share my life with. He is a very devoted father and husband. 4 years ago, when my father was diagnosed with Pick's disease, Jerry became his caregiver. Jerry has also been helping me with our 4 children before and after school. I couldn't ask for anyone more loving. He has a heart of gold. Financially, we are not close to being rich, but in the love we share, we are millionaires. I am with my soulmate and still head over heels for him. When I look back to the beginning and remember what a mess I was emotionally, I realize I wasted so much time worrying and not trusting anyone. He has shown me what a real man is, and it took time, but it was worth it. All the pain I had before Jerry is finally gone. I now live my life looking forward to our future and not dwelling on the past, always looking for negativity. I consider the pain I endured just part of the journey I had to go through in order to get the treasure I now have. Jerry, cherish every moment. Life is what you make of it. Okay, so now I'm going to read another feature from True Confessions magazine. This is called The Life I Live, and this one was written by Eva R. Priestley from New Jersey. Here's the little story. No, no, I used to say when my friends talked dreamily about waiting for a ring and a marriage proposal. Early wedlock is not in my plans. I want to savor my independence. And with that in mind, I steered clear of relationships with men. Cupid didn't pay attention to my declarations, or perhaps he wasn't very good at aiming. If his arrow was meant for me or it hit me by accident, I couldn't tell. But when it pierced my heart, all my good resolutions seeped out and love entered in. Within a year, I donned a white wedding gown and a veil, and I became the wife of a young soldier who promised to love and cherish me till death do us part. I gave up my good job, left my family and friends, and made a home with my man in a faraway state. The city girl turned into a country woman who, instead of tending balcony flowers, grew berries and vegetables to feed 2, then 3, then 4 hungry mouths. The days of going to the opera were gone, but we invested in stacks of LPs to have the pleasure of listening to our favorite arias and concertos. Our duties were split according to talents, his being the practical, hands-on ones, and mine those requiring writing and mathematical skills, besides the household chores, of course. When we worked on special projects, as a team, my husband and I had our most rewarding times. We kept our promise to stick together through the good times and the bad, and I did not regret speaking my wedding vows years before the original desired time. Several years ago, I found myself unmarried again. The Grim Reaper had come to snatch my man away. It made me refocus. When I came to terms with my loss, I decided to pick up where I'd left off, half a century ago and reclaimed my independence. Instead of catering to a man's or a mate's friends, I now enjoy the closeness of people I've chosen. I fill my days with writing, teaching, and lots of singing. Since I don't have my dance partner anymore, I go to a belly dance class at the local library, where most of the time I'm the oldest student. Oh, yes, life for a single senior can still be very exciting. Sometimes I imagine my husband is still by my side, and then I have a conversation with him, especially when something confounds me. How can I tackle this? I ask. I swear the inspiration I suddenly get comes from him. When I think about it seriously, I reach the conclusion that I'm not quite unmarried yet. My thoughts and my heart are still very much with my departed husband. And now here's a poem to finish out this romance show. This one was written by Janelle Mihalovetz from South Haven, Missouri. Here's the poem, and it's called Crush. A random touch is the most disquieting, the brushing of hands, a bump of the knee. In the aisle sends your heart beat rioting, surprised to find he holds the key to a feeling you'd forgotten existed, that eighth grade fantasy of Mr. and Mrs. in doodled notebook cursive, twisted into Valentine hearts and star bright wishes, giggling ponytails at the pizza place. Ask her to ask him if she knows, if he knows, squeals and blushes at the sight of his face as the teenaged god emerges from the video game Rose. But today the sink's backed up and the phone bill's due. Smile and sigh. The grown-up world summons you. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. As always, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my stories and my poem. And I will talk to you next week. In the meantime, have a great week and take care. This has been Volunteer Genios for Sun Sounds. Bye-bye.